Welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Brennan. Go by SEC Mike on Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, the senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you?
Mike, the Indiana Hoosiers are college football's national champions. What a crazy statement to utter, right? I mean, we're like living in some kind of like crazy college football world, but shout out to Indiana for great performance all season. What a great game last night. Great way to cap an unbelievable and awesome season. Now, Mike, the long off season has set in, my friend. So I can't wait to talk all things off season, and maybe we can figure out how SEC Mike's SEC teams can get back to the national championship at some point, right?
Well, how long before it's discovered that Indiana cheated? I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. How did they cheat to get this done?
You've already seen it, right? If I've seen, it's like they know the plays too well of the opposition. They must be doing some like advanced scouting, like, you know, Connor Stallions and all that. So it hasn't taken a long time. I'm sure that the conspiracy theories will continue. I will say one thing. Kirk Cinetti is a really, really good coach. And it is going to be fascinating later this offseason when some of the early coach, you know, best coach lists come out. Some people are already putting Kirk Cinetti over Kirby Smart. So just brace yourselves. There's going to be a lot of that coming this offseason, Mike.
Oh, Steven. I didn't want to go down this road, but you already got me on the Big Ten BS, I'll call it. But hey, if the Big Ten, and hey, to their credit, they've won three in a row. One of them for sure cheating. One probably soon to found cheating. But if the Big Ten's so big and bad and they're winning all these championships, why the hell would they want more teams in the playoff if it's working out well for them?
I am glad that you brought that up because, Mike, let me tell you what nobody is willing to talk about with this. The Big Ten, Fox, NBC, CBS, they are currently shut out of the playoff because they didn't bid enough to beat ESPN. So, of course, all these ESPN, SEC conspiracy theories that people seem to propagate quite a bit seem to miss the fact that these networks had a chance to bid for the playoff and missed on it. So why does Tony Petitti want more teams in there? Must try to add some value to, like, you know, Iowa versus Rutgers later in the season, sure. But because his television partners are locked out of the playoff right now, that's why they want to go to 24, so make the television networks happy. So, Mike, I think there's a be careful what you wish for. Because I think more SEC teams are probably bad for some of those middle of the pack Big Ten teams. I will say, and I will continue since you've got me on this ranting mode. The idea that we keep using these bowl games that our players are missing and all this stuff to make a conference supremacy is just completely asinine. Like, why are we continuing to make a statement that this conference is better than this conference because they have this record in bowl games? Like, these teams are missing 20, 30 players. Backup quarterbacks are starting for two teams. We got coordinators and coaches there. They're freaking preseason games. I looked at the preseason, you know, standings in the NFL. I would have gone broke had I bet on like the favorites in the preseason. Like, what are we doing here? Right.
Yeah. I've been saying it for years, Stephen, and it holds true. Bowl game only counts if the SEC wins it. Otherwise, who the hell cares? You know what?
I say who cares regardless. I mean, shoot. You know, I mean, not taking anything away from Iowa. They had a great bowl win over Vanderbilt. But doesn't Eli Stowers mean something? You know, Tennessee already had some guys that were missing. Then they were missing some more guys. And it's like a huge thing for Illinois to beat Tennessee. I mean, like, yeah, it's a great win. But this is like a freaking preseason game with how thin these rosters are. I just, if these teams played at full strength in September or October, I think we're talking about a different story. So I guess maybe in a sense it's, you know, these, like, if you're the Big Ten and the SEC's beat up on you for so long, you're just happy to have some good news, right? And so you're going to take the chance of, hey, let's beat the SEC while they're down a little bit and take advantage of all those bowl wins.
Yeah, and who was it? I'm trying to think. LSU. Not this last season, but the season prior, they had a receiver that played in the bowl game. He wanted some record for like catches at LSU, and he got it. And he's like, "All right, I'm done." I'm like, right. What? What are we doing here? You know what?
Didn't Cam Ward did that at Miami too?
Right.
The Pop-Tarts Bowl. I mean, It was Mario Cristobal. It's kind of his decision, which, I mean, I understand, given the injury factor, if you're made it to that point in the season and you've got X amount of million dollars sitting there, if you're the first pick in the NFL draft, like, hey, I get it. But that also just goes to the whole theme of, and Mike, USC went through this in the bowl game too. They lost to a backup quarterback at TCU, but USC was also missing a lot of players. I saw a lot of people taking up for USC. So if it applies to USC, it applies to Tennessee, it applies to all these teams equally. I just, if we're going to have a conversation about conference supremacy in college football, where it's at, it starts with the fact that we've got NIL, we've got transfer portal, we've got all these changes across the sport. That's the bigger deal to me. It's like the gap in the top has really shrunk, and you're seeing like Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Ohio State. It's really hard to keep a full 85-man roster stocked with talent because people are going to leave. So to me, if you want to talk about team or conference supremacy, that's where I start. I don't start anywhere in the bowl games. I mean, don't get me wrong, Mike. I am a bowl junkie. Watched every play of the Xbox Bowl and, you know, the Hawaii Bowl. But I didn't really get a lot of takeaways from those games. Those teams involved in the SEC. I watched it, turned the TV off, didn't think about it probably after.
Yeah. Well, hey, let me throw something your way, Steven. Again, I'm trying to figure out if this is a rare sign of genius by me or just tomfoolery. But you tell me. Because of where things are going and, you know, I think people wonder, well, you know, has this gone too far with the transfer portal with NIL? And it's my understanding this is basically all lawsuits, right? Where they tried to amend it to where you could do one transfer for free and then you had to sit out, and that got struck down in court. So basically all these things are getting struck down in court. So I don't even know if this is possible, but would you be in favor, Steven, if they would cap the transfer portal spending somehow? Like, I don't know how they do it, but let's say every team's got $10 million to spend in the portal every offseason, but there's an unlimited amount of money you can spend on retention of your roster. So legally, you're not preventing anybody from transferring. They can transfer as many times as they want. But you can't get as much, theoretically, unless you stay at your current spot. And that would encourage you to stay and develop. What's your thoughts on that plan?
I like that idea. I will tell you that I think kind of your first part of that question is, every time that something is tried to put into place, immediately there's some kind of legal challenge after that. And I think you have to kind of take a step back to kind of unwind this a bit. Everybody wants to blame the NCAA. The teams are the NCAA. The schools are the NCAA. For every committee that makes a rule, it's made up of administrators, coaches, athletic directors from schools. So what the NCAA is basically like a curtain. And it's like, we can blame them for everything that goes wrong. And then when a rule that, you know, if a rule affects a rival, well, too bad. That's the rules. If it affects us, we got to sue for them, right? So that's kind of like where we're at right now in the sport is, you know, to me, the action on the field, what's happening every Saturday and in the playoff is awesome. But I do think outside of that is like, we've got to be able to get to a place where the sport does have some, you know, kind of uniform rules. There's going to be rules that aren't going to be sued into oblivion every time somebody wants to pass one. And they're like hard and fast. And I think that's what the NFL gets it right in the offseason of saying, like, this is the free agency window. This is when it stops. You know, you have your restricted negotiation, your franchise tags, all that stuff. And to me, like, there's one portal window now, but you're already seeing it. What happens in the spring when somebody wants to unenroll and we just go to another school and we start again? So I think, to me, the ultimate answer is probably some kind of collective bargaining agreement where the schools and the players have an agreement that's hard and fast and sets rules on the portal, NIL and all that stuff. So I'm open to like anything that you propose there. I think the first step is we got to get everybody in the same page and just say, hey, this system, is working for the action on the field. The off the field stuff is really frustrating a lot of fans, coaches, and players. So let's do something about it, and let's come up with a system that's got some rules that we can kind of structure a roster and a calendar that makes sense, whether it's signing day, the start of the playoff, and all that. Like, let's reimagine this whole thing. Let's fix some of these things so that way roster stuff happens in the off season and we can focus on the season and the games while they're going on.
Yeah, and this is a good question from Emily. Appreciate you. You let me know if I'm mistaken here, Stephen. I still don't understand why we can't cap how many transfers are allowed. And it's my understanding, Stephen, that it, again, that's been struck down in court, I think, because they don't restrict students of you know, just a academic student, if you will. You can't prevent them from transferring. And I'm pretty sure that's the reason. Like, we can't put these athletes in a special category. It's already been decided again by the courts, to my knowledge. Is that accurate? Do you know?
That is accurate. I mean, I think everything kind of comes back to that space of if that rule was in place, it probably would be sued tomorrow, and they would probably find it struck down because they found, you know, they kind of have there used to be like the. Like you said, the one-time transfer, there was waivers and all that. Now it's just like unlimited transfers. So I think getting back to, you know, to that specific question, I think getting back to some space where it probably is collective bargaining that, hey, you can only transfer like one time for free if you're a graduate. And then if there's a coaching change, like that's probably where it needs to end up. And like you said, maybe like a focus on roster retention. Unfortunately, I think the answer to all of this, like, why isn't this in place and this in place? Like, I think they're afraid to get sued because when they have gotten sued, they've lost. And I think the only people that are winning, Mike, are lawyers. That's probably the fairest way to say it.
Damn, should have been a lawyer, right. But maybe in another life. All right. So Stephen has come up with the idea to reveal his way too early top 25 for 26. Now that 25 season officially in the books, and my favorite thing about lists like this, I get to fill the shoes of Cousin Shane, where I could just rip the list, say it's horrible, not offer any insight into why, but just, nope, too low. All 25, too low, even number one, Stephen. So how much thought and consideration went into your way too early top 25 here?
Mike, since we've been on the subject of transfers and kind of roster uncertainty, I think given that we're still seeing some portal movement, we're in a space where rosters are just more in flux than ever. I think this is like, it's a good starting point. It's almost like not, I don't consider this like my hard and steadfast, like top 25 that you'll see later this offseason, which by the way, Athlon Sports was the most accurate print magazine this year. So we'll take a little victory lap from everybody over there at Athlon. But this is
where did you have Indiana, though?
I think they were top 15, I think. Not number five. If somebody picked Indiana to win the national title and they were not an Indiana fan, I want them to like give me the lottery numbers for like, the next time. It's like, you know, super high. But to answer your question, Mike, I think given all that, you know, we know less about these teams now. It's kind of just, this is like a rough draft almost. It's just kind of a starting point. I didn't put a ton of thought into schedules at this point, just kind of looking at the teams, knowing what we know, and try to come up with a loose top 25 that would sort of be my working list the rest of the offseason.
Yeah, I always personally, Stephen, again, I don't want to bash people because everybody's got their own methodology, but I always thought it was silly to predict a team based on their schedule. And I think that's even more difficult now because we don't know. It's harder than ever to predict how good these teams are going to be. So trying to predict based on their schedule, I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, it really is. Because when you look at some of these depth charts and start trying to look back at last year and try to figure out 2026, you just go, you know, this guy's gone, transfer filling in. And even though, you know, Mike, I've been doing a lot of scouting from other conferences during the year, watched a lot of these guys, and you're still trying to get your arms around like, hey, how does this guy fit into this team and this system? And so I think that's kind of where we get into like spring practice. We'll kind of have a better idea of like, okay, these four transfers have really hit on the offensive line. This quarterback is hit. So I think more than ever right now, trying to assess the schedule is just super challenging given all the unknowns. And then, you know, kind of like you said, with the unknowns of the schedule, even more so with a 9-game slate coming up this year in the SEC, that's going to be another variable we'll have to account for at some point when we get closer to the season.
All right, Steven, so we're about to get into your top 25, but if you would not mind to share which teams just missed the cut out of the SEC, so who are you going to piss off first?
I thought about doing a top 25, Mike, and having all 16 teams in the SEC at one, just to start some off-season trolling, right? Let's start, Mike. I think a kind of work. I'll start with this. I think there were probably about 14 teams from the SEC that I consider to be like top 30-ish power rankings right now. I think there are two that I'm not quite there on in the top 30, but I think there was about 14 or so. Vanderbilt, and also I think Vanderbilt ahead of Mississippi State. Those two are probably closer to like 30, 35-ish. We can kind of talk through some of these teams if you want, Mike, but I'll kind of roll through them. I think Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, like I said, they're closer to that 30 to 35 line, whereas Missouri, Auburn, and Florida were much closer to the top 25. And then South Carolina was the first team that just missed my cut, basically team number 26. I really like the offseason upgrades for this team. I think you can make a strong case for them to be in the top 25. Big picture, not a lot of difference between like 20 and 35 on this list, which is why I think you could make a case to put Vanderbilt in there, a case if you think Missouri, Auburn, Florida, and even South Carolina.
Okay, so yeah, let's go through this one at a time. And let's start with Mississippi State, because I'm starting to warm up to them, Steven. I rated them 14 in my power ranking. So I'm not warming up too much. But point being, I've tried to identify a team that could be a breakout team. Year three, Jeff Lebby. Year one, I guess you could say, with Zach Arnett returning. I think that's a massive upgrade at defensive coordinator. And I like what they have at quarterback with Kamario Taylor. And it seems like Jeff Lebby can find these pieces. And they're being pretty active in the portal as well to kind of surround him with some weapons. What's your first read on Mississippi State here?
Mike, I think there's kind of a thought in college football, and it's maybe a little bit outdated now with the portal, but it was always like, hey, first year you lose, second year you lose close, the third year you kind of win. Especially when you're a coach that's got like a massive overhaul like Jeff Lebby has gone through. But I think it's kind of easy to make the case for this Mississippi State team to take a big step forward. You mentioned Kamario Taylor. If we kind of see every year, there's a team or two that has the quarterback hit, rising star, the offense could take off. Defensively, Zach Arnett's coming in. And I think between that and the fact that they've gotten deeper on that side of the ball from the portal, I think this defense will take a step forward too. Like you have an instant upgrade coming in at coordinator and a potential difference maker at quarterback. So I think some perspective though is needed. They have two SEC wins over the last 3 years. So if we're talking about them being like a top 40-ish team, 9-game SEC schedule, early thought is I don't know how big that translates into the win column, but if you kind of look at some of the advanced metrics, they were a top, you know, 45 to 50 type team this year. So dynamic offense potentially with Taylor, some defensive improvement, and I could see how this team is definitely on the right side of the 6-6, 7-5 to get to a bowl game. I like the trend line, and I like the upside of the offense.
Now, Vanderbilt is another one that you mentioned. How difficult is it to project what they will look like without Diego Pavia in the last hours? And they were one of I believe they're the most experienced team in the conference last season. How difficult are they to kind of peg?
Very difficult. I think you have to start with the idea that there is a lot of staying power with Clark Lee in charge. I think if we go back a couple years, I think Vanderbilt has adapted and kind of evolved. Like, hey, we got to be more aggressive in the portal. We got to have the funds to retain guys when we start to develop them. And certainly, I mean, Mike, you and I have talked about this too. If Indiana can win a national title and you see what Vanderbilt's done in the last couple of years, they almost made the playoff. That ought to be a wake-up call and say, hey, if we keep investing, we can make the playoff. We were right there on the doorstep. So I think on one side of it, you have to look at and say, hey, there's a lot of staying power, but Diego Pavia was really valuable to that team and how much he carried that offense. But you're also bringing in a freshman that's a five-star, and how does that kind of maybe overcome long-term the upside is there? So how many issues did Pavia cover up, I think, is a fair question on a team that the margin for error is probably pretty small. So I've got them as kind of a top 30-ish type team right now, and that's given a lot of credit to Clark Lee, I think, in the ability to where from where they've come to now and to keep it there.
Okay, and then you also mentioned Florida. Could this be a breakout team in this conference, coming off a disappointing season, but completely blew up the coaching staff? And I think you could argue they've retained the right players and let go of perhaps the, I don't want to say wrong players, but players that maybe just didn't live up to the billing. Florida is a team that I've got my eye on after you and I, but mainly me, hyped them up all last off season. You know what?
We're starting again, aren't we? I'm right there with you. I think, first of all, John Sumrall is one of the best hires of the offseason. He's been a head coach for 4 years, and they've had 9 wins in all 4 of those years, double digits in 3 of those 4 years as a head coach. Certainly, Troy, Tulane, a little different in the SEC. It'll be a lot harder. But I think immediately, Mike, I think there's got to be like a bump in coaching. Right? I mean, we know that Florida has recruited well. Nick Napier's leaving a pretty good foundation there in terms of talent. You know, Jake Slaughter, like Austin Barber, like replacing some of those guys is going to be tough, but they managed to keep Jaden Ball. They've got a quarterback in Aaron Filo who fits what Buster Faulkner wants to do. And I trust John Sumrall in this defense. They'll figure it out. Maybe not like first in the SEC, but I think his background on that side of the ball will show up this year too. So I just think in terms of a more well-coached team and taking advantage of talent, I think the potential is there for Florida to kind of be an early sleeper pick in this conference.
And then you mentioned Auburn as well. So a somewhat similar situation with Florida, you know, a very, very talented roster, but poor coaching last year. Now we bring in, hopefully, a massive upgrade at the coaching, specifically head coaching. And we kept DJ Durkin on defense. Now, we've lost a lot of guys via the portal, but we've imported damn near everybody we want from South Florida. So how are the Auburn Bulls looking, Stephen?
Mike, I think definitely trending up. I think that's the one thing for the SEC when you look at maybe kind of how this conference stacks up, maybe to like the Big Ten to next year, is that maybe Florida, LSU and Auburn all upgraded at head coach and can also take a step forward. Like LSU can make that jump to actually be a playoff contender. Florida gets back on track. Same thing for Auburn. I like the addition of Alex Golish just from having a more competent head coach, also a head coach that is very good on offense. We saw Auburn's offense show signs of life after Hugh Freeze was dismissed. To me, that bodes very well for Alex Golish bringing over a lot of his guys from South Florida and that system. So like Byron Brown is one of the top transfer pickups, Mike. I do think that if there is one thing that worries me, and that's kind of going to be the turnover in the trenches, like how fast does that go along? If you almost want to take a big picture look at this team, I think they got an upgrade at quarterback. I think they got a coaching upgrade. I think you trust Alex Golish on offense and you trust DJ Durkin on defense, but is the personnel going to be there enough to go from, you know, 6 wins potentially to like 9? Like their variance, that Auburn's a wild card again. I think they're definitely better next year. I just don't know right now if I can put them in my top 25.
How big is that week 3 game going to be? Florida at Auburn. Florida, if they're not undefeated, something's gone horribly wrong. Auburn will have to beat Baylor in Atlanta, but they probably should be undefeated. You know, that could be a sneaky good game.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't Auburn and Oklahoma like early in the season this year too, and we was like, that's one of the games we're going to circle to kind of figure out both teams. Also Auburn beating Vanderbilt shortly after that. I think early season game just to kind of figure out, hey, where are these two teams with new coaches? I think that's going to be something to watch, right? Just to see how far along they are in the first SEC game.
Right. So I think it'll be, because of that, Steven, it's going to be the first opportunity for each of these coaches to kind of win over some fans that are on the fence.
Yeah.
And more importantly, perhaps, lose faith of fans that are on the fence. Again, they're not going to write them off after one loss, but we know how fickle fans are. You know, all in, and then you drop one you shouldn't. You're like, I'm not seeing it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. SEC opener with a new coach on the other side of a chance to kind of prove yourself. I mean, absolutely. It's a chance. I think both coaches, barring some kind of poor showing, are probably going to be, like you said, undefeated going into that game. But if they don't have an offseason misstep and they get off to a good start, and all of a sudden you could really see like the confidence and buy-in start to go up if they can win one of those games. And just thinking, Mike, if you start to kind of do your early power rankings in the conference, those two teams are going to be probably picked near each other. That could actually mean a lot to figure out which team is higher in the standings. I know it's a long ways off, but in 9 games, SEC slate, that could be the difference between being 5-4 and 4-5 in the conference, maybe.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, Steven, the only other team you referenced out of the SEC that just missed the way too early top 25, the Missouri Tigers. What do you like about Mizzou?
Mike, I think 29-10 over the last 3 years. I mean, this team has been right there at, you know, double digit wins, 9 wins, you know, right there. This year, I think you could look and see maybe, or the last couple, and just see, hey, maybe a little bit of a missed opportunity with the schedule. Don't want to make too much of the schedule yet for 2026. But I like Austin Simmons coming in at quarterback. I think Chip Lindsey, not necessarily the most exciting hire as offensive coordinator, but I think there's a pretty high floor. His track record of working with quarterbacks, you could see it kind of meshing well with Austin Simmons. And then, of course, the run game. Like Hardy and Roberts are going to be beating up a lot of SEC fronts this year. Do think there are some questions on defense, but you could also look at it and go, they've done a good job of through the portal over the last couple of years of restocking. Now they've got a lot of holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball and in the secondary. So if Austin Simmons hits, Mike, this is probably a top 25 team. I think he's kind of one of the biggest wild cards right now as we try to sort this conference out early.
Oh, I think that's very fair, Steven. All right, so jumping in to the way too early top 25, who made the cut? Lowest ranked. Is that the right way to say it? Team out of the SEC.
Did I mention South Carolina was 26? I hope.
Oh, right. Yeah. South Carolina. So a lot of retention there. Very disappointing, though, Stephen, last season. But what do we know about Beamer? Oh, buddy. He likes to be inconsistent. I don't think he likes to be inconsistent, but he is inconsistent. So, hey, he's good during the even years. Hey, it's an even year coming up, Steven. This is the year, right?
That's right, Mike. I'm buying some South Carolina stock. I guess I saw Marler on your show. He's also buying up some stock. I guess me and Marler are going to have to maybe split this stock this offseason. I think they're going to be one of the most improved teams in the SEC. Number one, they've already got one of the better quarterbacks in the conference in Lenora Sellers. You throw in Kendall Briles. That offense, I think, will fit Sellers' skill set. I think they've added some guys up front that can really help on the offensive line. So just having competent offensive coordinators and assistant coaches and a quarterback that's one of the best in the SEC, I think this South Carolina team will definitely be bowling at least in 2026.
Shout out Derek. He said Mississippi State, that's week 3 at home. Sets the tone for the season. What are the odds, Stephen, you think that South Carolina can start the season 3-0, all at home, Kent State, Towson, Mississippi State?
I think the odds got to be pretty high. Much like that Auburn and Florida game, Mike, I think that Mississippi State, South Carolina game will tell us a lot about both teams, because I'll be curious to see by that point to see Mississippi State too. to see how far they've progressed, to see that defense under Zach Arnett. But also just thinking about, like you said, confidence level, like buy-in factor. If you're South Carolina and you have Mississippi State come to your place after the offseason of upgrades that they've had and now the ones you've had, and you lose that game, you know, we start after the disappointing season, early season disappointment can really build. Whereas if you just take care of business, you set up that game against Alabama, then you get Kentucky right after it, got a chance to get off to a nice start if you're South Carolina. So I think early season will tell us a lot. Also, should be a fun quarterback matchup with Taylor and Sellers, and that early in the season, that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my mistake, Steven. Now we're into the top 25. Who do you got there? Because you hate all those other teams.
Eight SEC teams making the top 25, Mike. Is that about right, or should there be more?
Oh, there should always be more, Steven. That ain't enough. Come on, that's only half the conference. Right.
Well, Mike, we're going to start. I hope Cousin Shane's watching this, because we're going to start with the Vols. And the Vols check in at number 19. They are the last team from the SEC to make the field, but the first team to appear in the way too early projections. I think Tennessee fascinates me from just how this team is constructed right now, because I trust Josh Heupel to figure out the quarterback situation, but I do wonder if it's going to take some time for one of the two younger quarterbacks to kind of take control of this offense. But on the other side, I think your defense is going to be better. Jim Knowles, add in some Penn State transfers. I know things didn't go great last season at Penn State for Knowles, but prior to last year, he was considered one of the top five defensive coordinators in college football. I don't think he forgot how to coach defense. So I think immediately Tennessee's defense is going to be better. How far along the quarterback situation progresses is the big question. But that's also why they make the field. I trust Josh Heupel. I like some of the skill talent coming back. And obviously the defense got a boost too with Carter coming back at linebacker from the portal. So I like the way things are trending for Tennessee's defense. I think there's some questions, of course, at quarterback that will be resolved this offseason.
Yeah, and I'm sure you saw it, Steven. But if any of the cousins missed it, as soon as Indiana won the national championship, they lost their strength coach to Tennessee. Come on, if we can't beat them, we'll steal all their coaches. So, that's Tennessee's replacement. I don't even think it's Cignetti, Steven. I think it's the strength coach, because Indiana seemed to get stronger in the second half of every game I saw, which is about two games. And, again, I'm going to credit that strength coach. He's bringing that mentality to Rocky Top.
We've reached that point of the offseason, right? The new strength coach has got the guys flipping over the tires. They're doing these new workouts. They're going to be stronger in the fourth quarter. Oh, man, I love it.
You can't deny the results, Steven. Right. You can't.
You can't, right? I think, if anything, this is kind of a higher on the margins almost, because you're trying to find, if you're Tennessee, you're trying to find your way back to the playoff. And so if you've had maybe some problems with injuries, you're trying to figure out how do we get better to close out some of these games, whether finishing in the fourth quarter against Georgia, Oklahoma, wherever it is, go out and get the best strength and conditioning coach. I like this hire for Tennessee. I mean, admittedly, don't know a ton about strength and conditioning coaches, but you're right. The track record is there from Indiana. And if you're Tennessee, you're just trying to get better on the margins. And this is one way to do it.
What do you think it is also fair to say, Steven, that, again, Josh Heupel, he's not some horrible coach. I know they had eight and four. We would have killed for that on Rocky Top not that long ago. But again, so they have taken a step back, but I think he deserves some credit for blowing up the coaching staff, blowing up the strength staff. The strength guy's been with him forever. You know, so this is a coach that recognizes it's not good enough, where we live in a conference, Steven. Now, this is not across the board, but a lot of these guys have won big, and I'm thinking guys that have won championships, like Jimbo Fisher, Gene or Gus Malzahn. His championship came as offense coordinator, but same school, where like some of these guys, they refuse to adapt. You know, I got here, Billy Napier, who again, not a great coach, but his ass is gone because he didn't want to give up play calling. You know, these guys get to these spots and they say, hey, I got here for a reason. Just let me do what I'm doing. And Hypel's saying, no, what we're doing is not working. I'm going to blow it up. I think there's optimism there that at least he's willing to change a lot.
Yeah, 100% agree, Mike, because I think you can look at Clemson almost and see what's happening to a coach that kind of gets stuck in its ways and say, oh, let's go back and hire Chad Morris because it worked like 6 years ago. Dabo's had to be more into the portal this year. You know, I think it would be very easy, I think, for Heupel to sit there and say, hey, we just made the playoff in 2024. We had a lot of injuries. We had our quarterback transfer. Why not just run it back with the same thing? And I think if you just look at the totality of this, Heupel's 45-20 at Tennessee. They've won 9 games in 3 out of the last 4 years. I definitely think he knows what he's doing. And I think I've been encouraged. If I was a Tennessee fan, I'd be encouraged. And I'm encouraged from the outside of this, looking at how they fit into this top 25 puzzle, because I see a coach that is adapting and trying to evolve. Like, we got to play better defense. What worked to get to the playoff may not work this time, but adaptability has been a thing. You know, 1 year it's like Hendon Hooker can score 45 points. The next year it's got to be, we got to lean on Dylan Sampson. And so you got to play better defense to get back to the playoff. And I think it's a good sign if you're a Tennessee fan that, hey, Heupel realizes that 8-5 isn't good enough and you got to get back there and you got to take some chances and take some swings. And I think so far they've done that.
All right. So first team, you're too low on Stephen, Tennessee. Get the heck out of here with that. All right. Who's next on the top 25?
Mike, this is a team that has not been ranked this low in a while. And let's go to Alabama at number 15. So this is a little bit uncharted territory, but also let me add, I think this team is still very much a playoff contender next season. Couple thoughts on this team. The offensive line and defensive line is definitely my biggest concern. I like they have been aggressive since the portal opened at trying to add some depth there. And we saw that last week where they picked up a couple guys. I would still like to see more additions at running back. I think they still have to have more balance next season. All those strengths and weaknesses could hold up, but I think the big question is, how good could Keelan Russell or even Austin Mack? Is there a chance that one of these two quarterbacks just says, hey, there are questions there. There are questions on the defensive side of the ball, but much like Kalen DeBoer did at Washington with Michael Penix and those receivers, maybe everything just hits. They score a lot of points and it kind of covers up for things. So there are some questions here, but there's also some upside. And I think Alabama in a little bit of uncharted territory where the expectations will be next year. But also I still think very much that if Russell or Mack hits, this team can make the playoff next year.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, though, Steven, because I don't know what to make of this team or really this program. You know, it's not fair to question the 26 team. They haven't had an opportunity. But, you know, they come out flat as hell against Florida State, and then they looked a heck of a lot better midway through. Then they kind of fell apart late again. But where's the defense? Where is the defense at, Steven? Do you think – And the defense statistically was pretty good, but they seem to have kind of lost that edge, that toughness, that physicality that they once had. Do you think once you lose that, it's gone forever, or can they get it back?
I think they can get it back. I think the question for me is going to be, and I think to some extent, Mike, I think this is kind of almost a conference-wide thing. Because we've talked about this, and just looking at some of the postseason All-America teams, the fact that Cassius Howell was like the only defensive lineman from the SEC to make the AP All-America team, you got to get better. It starts up front. Like you said, you got to have an edge up front to be able to get to the quarterback and stop the run. I think we saw Kalen DeBoer try to be maybe a little bit more different, like personality-wise, after that Florida State loss, and it worked. I think they kind of ran out of steam with the injuries and, you know, some of the other deficiencies that this team had. So I think maybe there's something to be said that now entering year 3, it is DeBoer's roster. He's had a chance to mold the team to his strengths and his weaknesses. He's brought in his guys from the portal. Does that help at all? maybe to kind of get this team in a little bit more identity direction where you want it to. I think that's something that I'm going to be kind of curious to kind of study this offseason. But I think they can get that identity back, right, Mike? But I think you are right. There is a toughness and sort of a – they got to win the trenches. Like, they've got to run the ball better. They got to stop the run better. Because, I mean, Indiana beat the heck out of them there in the Rose Bowl. And that sentence just doesn't make any sense when you think about the run that Alabama had, right? Yeah.
Yes, bizarro times, no doubt. All right, so who's next in the ranking, Stephen, out of the SEC?
Mike, this might be a little bit controversial. I know you've got this team at number one in your way too early rankings. But I've got Ole Miss at 13. And some of this is the uncertainty surrounding the Trinidad Chambliss waiver and potential eligibility for next season. If he's on the roster, move Ole Miss way up into the top 10. And certainly they could be an SEC championship contender. Kewon Lacy coming back, that's huge for Deuce Knight or Trinidad Chambliss, whoever it is. Also, Ole Miss has done a nice job of adding some guys in the portal recently at receiver. Jonte Cook, who's bounced around, I think very talented. If they can get the most out of him, he could be a playmaker. Daryl Gill transferred in from Syracuse too. He's another solid receiver. So whether it's Deuce Knight or Chambliss, you've got a good supporting cast. And also, Mike, you and I talked about this last week. I think they've done a nice job on the defensive side of the ball, getting some help to reinforce that front that struggled this year. So Pete Golding's off to a really good start to be 2-1 and almost be playing for the national championship. But I also do worry a bit. Kiffin was good. Charlie Weiss did a nice job too. Anytime there's some transition quarterback uncertainty, I do wonder what the drop off is going to be on a full-time level. So I think that's something that I'm kind of struggling with. And of course there is the quarterback uncertainty surrounding this team right now too.
What, where would you rank him though? If you, and of course you don't, so this is kind of an unfair question, put you on the spot here, but if Trinidad is eligible, how much would you give him a bump?
They would be a top 10 team for me nationally. And I think I would pencil them in probably at number 3 in the SEC right now. Okay. I still a little bit. Well, let me ask you, are you worried at all about the transition factor in all this? Or do you think like Chambliss could just cover up for some of that if he's back next year?
I'm not worried at all, quite frankly, Stephen, with the transition immediately, because there's still a lot of good players on there. And, you know, I've been doing some digging on the numbers here with Mr. John David Baker. And I know it's been a brief run here, but he's been at East Carolina as the offensive coordinator. And prior to that, he was on staff here at Ole Miss. So I would imagine he knows the playbook and the offense very well. Pete Golding was the defensive coordinator at that time. So they know what it's like to work with one another. I have to imagine they can, that's a good fit. I mean, heck, Golding wouldn't have hired him if it wasn't. But more importantly, Stephen, when he was at East Carolina last season, they were 25th in the country points per game, 18th in offensive success rate, with talent that ranked 77th. So, I mean, I realize it's a weaker, one of the weakest schedules in the country. So that you could criticize, but I just think it would be different if they were bringing in, I don't know, just insert Chip Lindsey. You know what I mean? Who's like unfamiliar with this system. I don't know. I think Pete Golding did a good job of bringing in a guy that fits like a glove what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think from a like schematic familiarity thing, I think it's there. And I think if anything, if you're just trying to say, I mean, it's kind of like what Pete Golding said at his kind of, when he was introduced to the players, like, you know, we've got this good thing going, let's put some tweaks on it, put your kind of stamp on it. And also if you go back to Baker's tenure at East Carolina, I thought one of the key things that he did was Caden Hauser, who transferred in from Michigan State to East Carolina. They also had Jake Garcia. He did a nice job of developing Hauser. And that's one of the reasons why Hauser might start at Illinois next year. They had a lot of transfers and a lot of pieces. They had the scheme, and they really kind of took off this year. So I think you could look at him and say the familiarity, the scheme fit. He knows the program. But also, if you have to start Deuce Knight, you could look at what they did at East Carolina and say, he's done a good job of developing quarterbacks. It can happen here too. So I think there's got to be some optimism that you're right. Like 3-4 years from now, when maybe this whole roster cycles off, is Golding as good as talent ID and all that as Kiffin? But I think as far as to keep it rolling, someone like Baker makes a lot of sense. And I think his track record will work out well in terms of development and scoring points there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, you can't say anything negative about Kiffin these days without LSU fans jumping on you. And he's done a remarkable job. And I rank him as I did last year. Same. Number two coach in the SEC. So it's not like he's a bad coach. I'm not saying that. But it might be good to have an adult in the room. You know? The stories have not been written, Stephen, of some of the shenanigans that people let you get away with when you're winning.
Yeah.
And even when you lose. Like to Kentucky. Should have never happened. But this, how Lane Wiffen missed the playoffs in 2024, I'll never know. Because that was the best roster he ever had to work with. And he should have played for a national championship, I think. They didn't even make the damn playoff.
Mike, you are 100% right. Because looking back at that season and you see where Ole Miss was, like in some of the metrics and stuff, they were a top five team. And it's frustrating as a fan. You're sitting there saying, man, this team is so good with Jackson Dart and Walter Nolan. It's like, man, I'd love to would have watched them in the playoff. Like you think about how poor, you know, the playoff went for a team, or the game went for like SMU playing Penn State. Like, wouldn't it be great to see Ole Miss that year? And I'm still not over that, not seeing that great Ole Miss team in the playoff, but you're right. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how things work out for LSU, especially, you know, if they don't get off to a good start right away, if they get off to a good start next year. So the LSU Ole Miss back and forth is going to be fascinating, isn't it?
It's not dying down anytime soon. I can promise you that. 100. All right. Who's next on the rankings here, Steven?
Speaking of LSU, LSU.
I knew it. I knew you were going to do it.
I got him just outside the top 10. I got him at number 11 nationally. Ole Miss was 13, if I didn't say that earlier. So LSU 11, Ole Miss 13, Alabama 15. You know, I really like what LSU has done through the portal on both sides of the ball. I think Sam Leavitt has got a chance to be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC next season. I think Lane Kiffin's brought in about 500 receivers. They can probably find some guys to catch the ball with Tre'Davious Green at tight end as well. I suspect also Blake Baker is going to put together a good defense. And Lane Kiffin has done well at bringing a lot of players from the portal, adapting, building a team. We just saw it at Ole Miss. So I think there's a chance that a lot of these transfers hit right away and LSU is better. I am a little bit worried. And anytime we talk about transfers, I have to kind of stop myself and say, just keep in mind, you know, not all of these may hit. It may not work out as great as we think. And what's the transition period? Is next year sort of like an 8-4, 9-3 type season before they really take off after having another portal class? I think that unknown plus the offensive line is still a bit of a question. Now, if they get Jordan Seaton, that goes a long way to addressing the offensive line. But I still have some personnel concerns, but I think this team is definitely on the right path. And you kind of have to trust Kiffin's ability to put together a roster here with the transfers.
And let me put you on the spot one more time, Stephen. Where would you rank, assuming he's 100% healthy, which by the season I have no doubt that he will be, Sam Leavitt, where does he ballpark rank among the SEC quarterbacks in your mind? Is he above the beloved Arch?
I think Arch is going to start either one or two, depending on what the status of Chambliss is. By the way, Vegas installed Arch as the early favorite in the Heisman. So,
of course they did.
Maybe I was just a year early. And maybe instead of writing five, I meant to write six, right?
Mm-hmm,
so, I think he's top five. you know, the hard part about Leavitt is he got off to a slow start, and it was his first year as the full-time starter, and Arizona State was going through a lot of transition too back in 2024. But he really took off down that stretch where they made the playoff. And I thought he made some clutch plays in the Peach Bowl. But then last year he got hurt, so we don't have a full set of data really, because he's missed time in 2024 too. So I think cautiously probably top five, you know, kind of with LSU too. I think how optimistic are you as a team? Because if the offense really hits, he's probably contending for all SEC honors. But I think Arch, Chambliss, maybe even Gunnar Stockton probably ahead of him. Would you agree with that?
Oh, well, honestly, I don't know enough about him. That's why I was kind of asking you. But I would just, as I'm kind of ballparking it, Trinidad, Arch. Yeah, I think Gunner's got to be up there.
Mateer, too, I think.
John Mateer, yeah. I like a lot. That may be the list. Now, again, I would like to see Sellers vault into there.
Yeah.
But he wasn't last year, so he's kind of got to earn that. And then Marcel Reed is probably right there, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's kind of the – I think at the bare minimum, he's in the upper half of the conference, right? I think based upon what we know. I think Austin Simmons, like Kamario Taylor, could be quarterbacks that surprise next year. I think certainly Byron Brown is another one, too, with his familiarity in the scheme. So I think like on the low end, like probably seventh or eighth, maybe top five if everything works out, you know, as far as like the whole – bringing in X amount of transfers, new offense, kind of making this all work. How fast does it take off?
Do you think it's fair at all to compare Gunner, Stockton, and Marcel Reed in terms of good players? They've had highlight type plays. They're somewhat inconsistent, and fair or not, if we're being unbiased, I mean, Georgia people, they love Gunner, right? Texas A&M people, I see you, Bo. Love Marcel. That's fantastic. But I would also say, again, fair or not, I think it's just the reality. I think both of those guys were greatly aided by the talent around them. Does that make sense? Again, that doesn't mean they're bad players, but when you're throwing to dynamic receivers, not all the throws are easy, but you know, basically they could turn a 5-yard catch into an 80-yard touchdown, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you got 85-yard touchdown on your statistics. I'm not that doesn't make you a bad player, but I think it aids how people view you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, because I think what was the early knock on Stockton was that he wasn't throwing downfield enough, and I think certainly part of it is getting the ball in the right hands of your playmakers to make plays after the catch is part of it. Stockton's yards per attempt in SEC games was 7.7, 3 picks, 21 touchdowns. That's pretty good in SEC play. I think for Reed, my biggest concern was kind of like the mistakes we saw against Texas and Miami. Moments where you need your quarterback to elevate his play to lead you to a win, maybe they fell a little bit short. And I think this is kind of an off-season like debate that we can have about some of these teams, and when we try to rank them, is the quarterback a guy that is just going to be like a facilitator and you've got to have a great defense and you got to have a great running game, or can he elevate your team? And I think that's kind of like when you saw like Mendoza this year for Indiana. They had a great running game, they had a great defense, but you saw it like against Penn State, against Iowa, Oregon, even last night. When they needed plays, he made them. And so I think he's not necessarily in that facilitator category. He could elevate you. Like, the game is on the line. Do you trust this guy to be a difference maker, I think, is the question. I think that's kind of what – I don't know that I'd put necessarily those two quarterbacks into that category right now. But I think if everything around them is going well, I think they could they kind of take off. Does that make sense?
No, I think that's fair. And I think that's kind of how I evaluate him, but – again, maybe both of them will take a big leap this year.
Yeah.
This was the first – I know they had played previously, but this season was their first as the full-time starters, and they had great years. So naturally, year two should be a little bit, now maybe a little bit tougher for Marcel because it's different. Well, same offense, I think, but different play call. I don't know. It's just a little confusing. Whereas Gunner and Bobo, those guys are tied at the hip.
It's funny there. Of course, Georgia, Stacy Searles is looks like he's going to be an analyst next year, and they're changing offensive line coaches. When I saw the headline, Georgia makes staff change, I thought, how many Georgia fans were going to click that hoping that it was going to be Mike Bobo, right? So, but I think if I have confidence in one of them, I do worry a little bit about Marcel Reed, the offensive coordinator change there, Wiggins being a first-time play caller. Bobo's got a ton of experience. It feels like both have the potential to take a step forward next season. Of course, like you said, the playmakers are both a little bit in transition too. So that's going to be interesting because both of those teams, Texas A&M and Georgia, should be right there in the playoff. And if they get great quarterback play, we could be talking about both making a run at the whole thing next year.
All right. So, hey, we went on quite the tangent. Who is next in the way too early power or top 25 rankings?
How about Oklahoma, Mike? One spot ahead of LSU at number 10. I like what the Sooners have done in the portal on offense to upgrade the targets around John Mateer. We talked about the Hayden Hansen at tight end, Trell Harris at receiver. Upgrading the weapons at receiver gives, you know, kind of takes some of that pressure off of Mateer, gives him more playmakers. Now, if you can get the offensive line, you can get that running game going, you're talking about a much more functional offense in 2026. I know the defense has some turnover. I'm really not that worried about it because I just trust Brent Venables. And with Kip Lewis coming back, they've got experience at corner. Venables is going to find ways to keep this defense going. For Oklahoma, to me, it's all about how far does this offense progress in 2026.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this, Stephen, because Shane and I, now we're a bunch of jokesters, obviously, but we never joke, Stephen, about who's going to win the national championship. And I don't know if you saw it, but Shane, I put him on the spot. I said, all right, predict it now. 26 SEC national champion is, he said, Texas. And I said, Oklahoma. Now go with me here, Stephen, a friend of the show, Dave Bartu. He does a really good job. He is, what's the word I'm looking for? He has discovered a statistic that I think more people need to be aware of, and it's scoring efficiency, offensive and defensive. The last 27 national champions in college football, they rated as a top three offensive or defensive scoring efficiency team in the country. So basically, you have to be elite at something, offense or defense. You know, preferably both, but that's not very realistic, right? But Indiana was there, so they kept the streak going. So that's kind of a, you know, no shit thing. You know, of course you got to be elite to win it all, right? But you got to be top three. The last 27 national champions have ranked in the top three scoring offensive or defensive efficiency. And if I'm sitting here looking at a trying to find one SEC team that will rank in the top three in offensive or scoring efficiency, and for people that don't understand, I know these are big words. These words are too big for me, Stephen. But basically, all it means is if you're on offense, how many snaps are you taking? How many points are you scoring? So basically, you want to be scoring touchdowns, obviously, with fewer snaps, because that means the defense can't stop you. And vice versa for defense. You want to limit points allowed based on how many snaps you're facing. So basically, it takes more snaps to score on you because you got a good defense. And to boil all this BS I'm saying, if I had to pinpoint one team out of the SEC that I believe will be elite on offense or defense, I think I'm going with Oklahoma to be elite on defense. What's your thoughts on that?
I think I would agree with that. I wrote down Georgia's defense too. I think Texas offense could be there. I also wrote down the Texas defense, but also think that's probably a little bit of a stretch. I think probably your most likely candidates are probably the Georgia defense and Oklahoma defense. So I would agree with you with Georgia's defense probably close behind.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just something to think about. And Georgia took a step back, I thought, on defense early in the year.
Yeah.
And then they turned into a borderline elite, if not elite, by the end of the year. So, but they didn't look too elite against Trinidad. But I think that was just Trinidad making the plays. You know what?
I think so too. You know, we had basically half a season, or maybe it's November, of the Georgia defense finding ways to create more pressure and cut down on some of the big plays that they were giving up. We saw early on. And I think you can just kind of look at the depth chart for Georgia and just go down the list and say, like, there's very few seniors. I know CJ Allen's off to the NFL, but there was a lot of sophomores and juniors that were playing. So you kind of, it's almost the old school way of thinking of college football is like back before the portal was crazy, like 10 years ago, you'd look and say, oh, they've got all those sophomores and freshmen and juniors are playing. They're probably going to be really good next year. So I think that applies to Georgia, where I could see this defense going from, yeah, they were sort of one of the best in the SEC to maybe just taking off. And I think Oklahoma fits that bill too, just because of the track record given Venables.
Look, Cousin Shane chiming in. He's trying to sound smart. Yeah, I'd the hell out of this response. I am inclined to agree, particularly given the coherence and internal consistency of the argument. That is, Shane knows about two of those words used there. So
did ChatGPT write that?
Of course. He is a heavy AI user. So I say all that to say, yeah, I agree with you. I think Oklahoma could be elite next year.
What's your biggest concern right now about Oklahoma next year?
The offense's inability to run the football at a level that you need to win at a high level. Does that make sense? So, I mean, they often couldn't run this year. They won 10 games.
Yeah.
I would never say luck, because I don't truly believe that in this conference, but it was a dynamic defense. It was elite special teams till the playoff game. But besides that, and it was John Mateer making the plays. Again, it's very easy. It's so funny to see Texas people criticize him when he put the damn team on his back and beat Michigan, which is literally what their quarterback did, and they've crowned his ass. Auburn, he game-winning drive. You know, that was gutsy. And then he got hurt, and, you know, he had a good game against Tennessee. I don't know. Basically, the point being, Steven, is that they were too reliant on a quarterback that had already suffered a tough injury. And if we go into this year doing that again, I think it's a recipe for disaster.
I do too. I think one of the things that I'm curious about with Mateer was how much of that thumb injury was still bothering him in the second half of the season, because I thought, maybe my eyes are deceiving me, I thought he was throwing the ball with a little bit more velocity in that game against Alabama. Now, maybe that doesn't mean anything, but I thought that there was a little bit more confidence in the way that he was throwing the ball in that playoff game. And of course, it didn't work out. But I do wonder, sort of like a reset almost, like you got a chance to get healthy. You got another chance to grow under Ben Arbuckle, and you've got better receivers. And the way that Oklahoma developing, like its offensive line, like some transfers, but obviously like Fasusi, and you look at some of the other younger guys coming back next year, you know, that's a pretty good place to be when you got some like bedrocks kind of starting to form along your offensive line of younger players, which in theory should translate to being able to run the ball better, which should in theory make things easier for John Mateer, maybe open up some shots in the passing game to some of those guys they brought in through the portal or Satanga coming back. So I think if you're if you're Oklahoma, like you could sit here and say, well, maybe they did have some good fortune, but at the same time, like their defense kind of created it. They created an offense with all the big plays. Maybe they don't have that kind of ability next season, but they have just a better team overall. And you don't have to win the close games against an LSU or Missouri to get back to the college football playoff. Kind of a funny spot because this time last year it was all hot seat talk about Brent Venables. And here we are 1 year later sitting here saying, man, I mean, this team looks pretty good on paper to me. They could be back in the playoff again next year.
I would also say, to answer your question again, another issue perhaps for Oklahoma is I don't know how good Ben Arbuckle is as a offensive coordinator. I don't think he's bad, but I don't know how good he is. Is that a fair assessment?
Definitely fair. Very hard to evaluate considering Washington State played such a poor schedule in 2024 and then given Mateer's injuries and the personnel shortcomings, it's really hard to make sense of it. I think when I watch Oklahoma, I feel good about like the direction and some of the things they did schematically. And there were times where it felt like Arbuckle did a good job of like, okay, I'm going to scheme this play open. You got to hit it. Mateer would miss it. Maybe it was the thumb injury. Maybe it was just the pressure. I feel like there's a pretty good offensive coordinator in there. I think we're going to find out this year, though. And I think that's with Mateer healthy, better offensive line, improved weapons. I think to your point, how far he can take this offense might kind of make or break whether or not they get back to the playoff this year.
Okay, so who is next out of the SEC and Stephen's way too early top 25?
Let's go to number 7, Texas A&M, Mike. Aggies back in the top 10. Certainly the end of the season did not go well with the loss to Miami. But I think about trend line here. And I think the Aggies are trending up. Getting to the playoff in Mike Elko's second year. I don't think this is a case of like Jimbo Fisher where there were some signs of progress and then it fell off. I think Texas A&M is here to stay. Like what they've added in the trenches from the portal. You think about somebody like Wilkin Formby who played at Alabama. Anton Saka, the transfer from Northwestern on the defensive side of the ball. The volume is there, too, to restock both the offensive and defensive lines. So I think you can look at trend line, portal additions, and then you have to kind of hope, if you're a Texas A&M fan, that Marcel Reed takes that step forward. Mario Craver's back. You've added receivers to the portal. Bethel Roman's ready for a bigger role, too. I'm a little bit worried. You know, I like what they've added in the portal, but there's also a lot of turnover on the offensive and defensive line. So how that plays out, offensive coordinator, Reed's development, that's going to determine whether or not Texas A&M gets back to the playoff next year.
And if they could beat Texas.
True.
Haven't been able to do that, which is, that's a big roadblock for this program. Got to get over the in-state rival there, but yeah, I mean, it's very hard not to be impressed with what Coach Elko's done in this conference. It's been, you know, I think both years, Steven, I think he's been in the running for SEC Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
So Mike, if they continue to trend up, that maybe next year, year three, maybe he'll win it and I mean, I don't think they've got anything to hang their heads about.
I don't think there's anything. Like, I know if you're Texas A&M, you have to be disappointed about the way that the playoff game went. Because I think if they won that game, they might have made a similar run like, you know, Miami did. Because it kind of felt when you looked at that game and said, you know, whichever one of those teams win, and if they could get hot, like, there's a path there. There's a path to get to maybe the semifinals or to the national championship. I know we're not talking too much schedules, Mike, but man, their road schedule next year, LSU, Alabama, and Oklahoma for Texas A&M. And then you got the at Oklahoma, Texas back-to-back at the end of the season. So we go back to something we talked about in the offseason. And sometimes the anonymous coach scouting, it doesn't work out. But I thought that one quote really stuck with me, which was opposing coaches saw sort of the foundation. They saw the culture change at Texas A&M, and we saw it play out this year on the field. And I keep thinking about that and saying, Mike Elko's not going to let this group like just have that taste of success and say, we're going back to 8-4 next year. I think this team is going to be right there again to be in the college football playoff, even with that difficult road slate.
Mm-hmm. How much improvement, though, do we need on the defensive side of the football? Because I know we won a great deal of games, but defense kind of, I don't know. I don't know how good the defense really was last year. Is that fair?
I think they gave up too many big plays on the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly we saw that in the game against Miami in the playoff. Maybe the confidence thing here, if I was Texas A&M, it almost feels like if Mike Elko devotes himself to an offseason project, that changes, right? You remember the blistering that he gave his defense after the Vegas Bowl where they lost to USC. And so you're sitting here kind of looking at this game, the season results for Texas A&M and saying, you know, they got to be better on defense, and the rush defense maybe didn't live up to the, I mean, certainly he said that after the game against Miami. You got to think they're going to put some emphasis on getting better defensively. And of course they did have some turnover up front, and I think that played a role in that this year. But I think to your point, I think there is another level this defense has got to get to. Last season, they gave up about 5.3 yards per play on defense in SEC games. I think if you're talking getting to closer to like 4.7, 4.8, that's an elite defense in the SEC. So they still have some room to grow there for sure on that side of the ball.
And then what's your confidence level that Marcel Reed could take his game to another level?
I think he can. I'm a little bit worried about the offensive coordinator change. I thought Colin Klein did a really, really good job there. And I know it was kind of like a slow build type of situation. They had to go out and get some receivers, and they did that with Concepcion and Craver. You know, Wiggins is a first-time play caller. I would like to see somebody with a little bit more experience. Now, you could also look at it and go, you know, he's been on staff. That combination of Wiggins and Reed working together, maybe that's the best pairing for 2026. Cut down on some of the mistakes that we saw. You know, 9 interceptions in SEC games, they can lower that total. I think that can help Reed too. So I think there's another level. I am a little bit cautious on whether or not Wiggins is the right guy to kind of unlock that potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, A&M, highest scoring efficiency, Stephen, in 2025 since the COVID year, which you'll probably recall that, you know, they were quite good, but barely missed the playoff. And the highest other than that since 2013, Kevin Sumlin. So, again, A&M was, for them, one of the better offenses in modern school program history. So, I don't know. I just feel like that's going to be very, very difficult to replicate with a first-time play caller.
Could also throw in offense. You know, we talked about the offensive line concerns. You're turning over, you know, quite a bit of that group. You're also turning over, you know, losing Concepcion with such a valuable piece to that offense. So you add up. You know, this might also make the evaluation of Marcel Reed difficult. You know, we wonder, can he take the next step? Well, you're adding in new OC, change at receiver, you know, offensive line. Like, all of these variables are kind of hard to sift through about Reed. Like, he could almost be better, but all the pieces around him are going to be different. And does that add more pressure? Does that take a toll on his play? I think is a fair kind of offseason question to figure out.
Or Bo says maybe just Colin Klein checked out. Again, highest scoring efficiency since 2020. And I don't even count that year because of COVID. So regular year since 2013. But guy checked out, Steven.
Maybe, maybe checked out in the playoff game thinking about Kansas State. There were some interesting calls. Yeah, I will agree with you on that one.
Oh, but brother. Okay, who's next in the rankings, Steven?
Mike, we're going to go to the top five. And I know you like hearing that because I know you want to see the SEC back at the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to Texas at number 3. Arch Manning, like the way that he played down the stretch. Texas going out and getting Cam Coleman, I think, is going to make a big difference. And, of course, the two running backs, Relique Brown and Hollywood Smothers. I like what Texas has done, offensive line, receiver, and running back in the portal. absolutely fascinated to see how Will Muschamp, what he does on this defense, because there is a little bit of turnover on that side of the ball. So this is kind of a play that Steve Sarkisian had Texas in the semifinals 2 years in a row, 10 wins last year. Not bad, not meeting preseason expectations. This is kind of saying, think Arch Manning's going to reach that potential this year and get Texas back in the college football playoff.
Any concern, though, Stephen? Any concern at all that the offense has regressed 3 years in a row in offensive scoring efficiency? That is, Shane just writes that whole, all that on. He's like, numbers. Get out of here. But again, scoring efficiency, Stephen, 23. Texas was 35 in the country. 24, they were 49th in the country. And then 25, 78th in the country with a top five roster. I mean, to me, that's inexcusable.
It's inexcusable because of the talent, for sure. Is Sark spread too thin, maybe? Trying to be a head coach, trying to be a GM, trying to navigate the roster, trying to be OC. It's hard. I know Venables is, you know, of course, Venables is doing a great job. And, you know, there are a lot of other coaches serving as OC, DC. But maybe that, maybe some new ideas. Is Sark maybe too afraid to change assistant coaches too?
Yeah, and they always say there's so many cooks in the kitchen there, Steven, so it's difficult to manage all that. Talk about being spread too thin and getting people, you know, everybody wants their say, everybody thinks they can fix it. And they're bringing in big time names in the transfer portal, so people are going to demand results, as they should. But I'm a little concerned. I mean, that's a pretty big red flag to me.
It is to me too. Those numbers are concerning. I could almost look at that number. I think you said 78 last mm-hmm. year. That to me is, I mean, certainly on the coaching staff, but a lot of that's got to be in the offensive line, because I mean, they couldn't, you know, pass protection was an issue for your quarterback. And then you add in the inability to run the ball. And a lot of times it felt like, hey, it's third and long. Maybe somebody can get open deep. Felt like maybe later in the season, they had a little bit more of the playbook on the short and intermediate stuff to help out Arch. So, I mean, and all that's a reflection on Sark too. So, and Sark and Kyle Flood and all those guys on the offensive staff. So I think 2026, I mean, we look at the roster that Texas has, and it is a roster that can win the SEC and it can win the national championship. And if they have another 10-3 season where they miss the college football playoff, I'm going to start to get a little bit concerned about things in Austin, because there's just too much talent here to be performing at that level offensively and kind of what happened if you miss the playoff 2 years in a row.
Right. And another crucial statistic here, Stephen, offensive success rate, which is essentially, you know, just trying to stay ahead of the chains, how much success you're having on first down to make it a more manageable second down. And of course, a more manageable third and fourth and converting on third and fourth. Texas was 104th in the country last season after being 33rd the year prior. So a huge step back. Mostly, I would imagine, due to failed conversions on third down. They were pretty brutal for much of the season. I don't know. That's the evidence is mounting here.
I think there's too many third and longs, to your point. You know, there wasn't the kind of ability to stay ahead of the change and be efficient. So they were constantly like third and seven, third and eight. Hey, Arch, bail us out with a play, or maybe they're would be a completion and the guy would drop it downfield. I think they had 22 drops as a receiving core last season. I do think they took some steps to kind of fix that offensive line. And I think you and I talked about this during the season. For as much talk as like, is Arch meeting expectations? Is he a flop according to some? The biggest problem was that offensive line, because the whole, like, he was either under too much pressure or asked to do too much. They've added Melvin Ciani, the transfer from Wake Forest, who can maybe help maybe at tackle. They brought another guy from Oregon State who can help at guard. They're still in the mix to get Jordan Seaton. So I think continuity plus improvement, I think there's that group should be better. Is it good enough to win the national title? I think that's where I'm not there yet, but I think if Arch takes his game up a notch, you get Muschamp to kind of keep this defense where it is, or it's better. They should absolutely be a playoff team next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, maybe Arch is such a transcendent player that he can overcome that. And of course, he can't do it alone, but if Cam Coleman is, well, we know how good he is. Hollywood Smothers, running backs can adjust. Heck, they adjust to the NFL seemingly without issue. They can adjust to this conference without issue. So, I mean, they're going to have the talent. I'll just put it this way, Stephen. If those rankings that I, scoring efficiency and success rate, if they continue to trend down, major changes must be made. Not will be, must be.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, would Sark be asked to find another job? I don't know.
I don't think they'd ask in Texas. They'd say, get the hell out of here. Yeah. We're getting Cignetti. You know what?
Right. I think I do wonder, and we've seen this in this portal era, and you know, every coach talks about like the roster management and sort of like all the extra stuff is, you know, if Texas continues to trend down, would they go out and hire an offensive coordinator, take some of that off Sark? But I think you bring up a good point about, you know, Arch and sort of overcoming some of these things. You know, for all of the early season struggles, and like we said, some people called him a flop and all that, you know, down the stretch, he was playing some really good ball. And I thought for all the offensive line sort of solidified too, they seemed to find a mix that worked, kind of shuffled some guys around. Wasn't great, but it also was better. It was good enough to beat Texas A&M, was good enough to beat Michigan in the bowl game. Obviously came up short against Georgia. But I think Arch can, if he can elevate his game, can kind of cover up for some of those things. But they also have to do the small things right. They got to be able to run the ball and make his life a little bit easier. So I think that's where their scoring efficiency numbers may not go up a ton. But Mike, if they can run the ball better, Arch covers up for some stuff, they're going to be, you know, right there offensively back on the good side of things.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong, Steven. I believe there's just one team remaining.
It is, Mike, and we're going to go up one spot to number two, and it's the Georgia Bulldogs. I think you can make a case that this team could be number one as well. I've got them at number two behind Ohio State right now. We kind of talked through a little bit about this team. You know, I like Gunnar Stockton. I think can he get better is going to be the big question. They lose Zachariah Branch. Offensive line was, Drew Bobo went down. That kind of hurt the group late. But I think there should be some optimism about this offensive line and rushing attack, plus another year of Gunnar Stockton. This defense, too, young group with a chance to get even better next season. So Georgia's won the SEC in back-to-back years. Haven't won a playoff game since that national championship, but I think they're going to be right there in the mix to win it all next year.
And I have seen some criticism already, Stephen, which is probably not fair, but what you just said there, they haven't won a playoff game in a while yet. We just insert them into the top five. How dare we? How dare we, Stephen? Of course, what happened last year, it's not a indication of what is to come, but to a lot of simpletons, that is. Is Georgia just that team? There is no Alabama as dominant as Nick Saban. I don't think there ever will be. But is Georgia that team that, above all others, gets the benefit of the doubt, rightfully so?
Probably. It's interesting as we're talking about top 25 and thinking about, okay, who's going to be a top five team? I've seen Indiana be ranked number one in the preseason by some already. You know, I've got them in the top five. Talk about giving the benefit of the doubt when they lose quite a lot. Georgia brings back a lot. They were a playoff team this year. But I also think you kind of have to give Georgia the benefit of the doubt because Kirby Smart's best coach in the country, second best by some behind Kirk Cignetti. The track record, what they bring back. I mean, I'm not necessarily as worried about the back-to-back playoff performances because you could look at it in kind of each one and go, first game, they had the quarterback transition with Beck getting hurt in Atlanta. Second game, Trinidad Chambliss kind of had an out-of-body experience where he was unbelievable several times in that game. Certainly, Georgia could have done this better. They could have done that better. And we could have talked about them winning the game. But they've won national titles. They've been to the playoff 2 years in a row. They're going to get back there. And I think they're very capable of winning it all next year if some of these preseason questions that we have are answered by the talent development in the program.
Hey, shout out. We love all Stevens on this show, and we always appreciate Steven up. Thank you, brother.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven up. Gave us $20, Stevens. Thank you, Stevie Lassen. We appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge of the game and the players. Thank you, Steven up.
Appreciate you, Steven up. And thanks to all you cousins for coming and hanging out with us all the time.
Yeah. And he didn't even get that mad that you ranked Bama too low. So,
you know, I will say, you know, Mike, I think I did these rankings over the weekend and I had one of those moments like, oh my gosh, like, am I too high or am I too low on one of these teams? And then I saw On Three put out their rankings and I was like, oh, okay, I'm not too far off. So, I hate to be like the blob mentality that everybody's like shifting this direction, but it seems to be, for the most part, this seems to be the early consensus forming on the SEC teams next year.
Right, which I do appreciate because I like to go against the mob. You go with the mob, Steven. I go against it. That's why Ole Miss is number one. But any of these teams that you're most confident about your predictions and maybe perhaps more importantly, least confident about your predictions here?
I think I'm most confident in Georgia. I think this team is, it's easy to sit here and say like, oh, like, you know, we talk about like the false motivation that Kirby uses sometimes, but to your point, Mike, I mean, they haven't won that playoff game since the national championship. I'm sure there's going to be some doubters this offseason. A lot of people may pick Texas. Georgia's won back-to-back SEC championships. They're sitting in a pretty good spot. So I think just based upon track record, head coach, roster talent, I trust Georgia a lot. Feel pretty good. They're going to fall somewhere in the top five by most this preseason. This is kind of a bad answer for you, Mike, on the least confident, but it's like LSU and Ole Miss right now. I hate to keep grouping these teams together, but LSU, which is with so many new faces, trying to figure out, okay, they've got Lane Kiffin, they've got this great portal class, they've got a good quarterback. How does it all fit together? I mean, Kiffin's done it once at Ole Miss. Does it come together this time too at LSU? And then, of course, the Chambliss situation at Ole Miss to kind of be the biggest preseason question right now in the SEC.
Hey, would you buy in at all, Steven, to the fact that Georgia's got a lot of motivation? I mean, all these teams should, right? But Georgia still, even though they haven't won a playoff game there in recent years, they're right there. They're knocking at the door. Heck, you know who else couldn't win a playoff game, Steven? Indiana. You know who couldn't even get in it because they kept losing to Michigan? Ohio State. You know who couldn't? Michigan, the year before they won it, they got embarrassed nationally by TCU. They were, I believe Michigan was like a 10-point favorite in that game.
It's because TCU's changed their signs. They, you know, they were stealing them.
Yes, exactly. So they knew the cheater scheme. But basically by point here, if I have one, is would you buy into the fact that Georgia still has his championship window? And you know Kirby knows that. You know the players know that. Yet if they don't get it together and don't win it next year, I'm not saying that window will be slammed on them, but it gets slammed a lot quicker than people realize. I don't think Alabama, even though I was calling them a decaying dynasty, I don't think they were willing to admit that it was coming to an end for Saban, and it came. Boy, did it come. Steve Spurrier, Philip Fulmer, on and on and on. I mean, when it comes quickly. Could there be an extra level of motivation in Athens this offseason that, hey, this could be our last dance, so to speak?
I mean, I'm a big fan of The Last Dance because, you know, I like the Bulls. So anytime we can mention like Rodman and Jordan and Pippen and drama, I'm all for it. I do think you bring up a good point, because my first instinct was like, as long as Kirby Smart is there, the door is open, right? But then you also think too, how fast things can change. I think about Florida State, who felt like, oh, we got Mike Norvell, we kept him from Alabama, we were just in the doorstep of making the playoff. What happens? I mean, they're really just keeping Mike Norvell around because they can't afford to fire him. I mean, you know, it's. I'm not saying that Georgia was going to go to that depth, but I think like, what if Kirby Smart gets this unbelievable offer to be an NFL head coach? He just gets tired and said, you know, this portal NIL stuff, I hate it. I'm getting out of here. I guess what you know, my first instinct was that like, hey, as long as Kirby Smart is there, then I realized there's over 30 coaching changes this year in college football. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of this at all, but if you'd have told me like when Sherrone Moore would be fired and in jail in a couple of days, like I never would have imagined that in the world of college football. And not saying that that's where it's going to end up for anybody, but what I'm trying to say is like things can change very quickly in the world of college football. So you just never know. You kind of have to capitalize on this year. And with rosters being so crazy from year to year and so volatile, you never know what's going to happen with the roster next season, how it's going to shake out. So if you got it, you got to take advantage of that opportunity. I would also argue, Mike, the same thing applies to Texas, because I think their window of opportunity is open with Arch Manning, as you know, he'll be probably going to the draft after next season. What they've done in the portal to go get a guy like Cam Coleman to bring in the running backs, like their window of opportunity is open too. And it does, if you don't reach those expectations, if they fall well short, it gets harder with that kind of, you know, proof of concept kind of positive momentum thing where it could quickly erode. And maybe, like I said, Sark could go to the NFL, Kirby Smart could go to the NFL. Things could change pretty fast in this world of college football right now.
Mm-hmm. And then I also asked you, Stephen, to share your thoughts on which teams you kind of the portal changed most drastically for your top 25. Are there any that stand out to you? So basically, you know, maybe you had a vastly different opinion of, and then you saw who they added or lost via the portal and it changed. Did any of those really change for you?
Yeah, this one won't come as a surprise, Mike, but LSU. You know, I think pre-portal, maybe a fringe top 25 team because you just kind of give them a bump with Kiffin. I think sort of post-portal, as we're kind of filtering out the last movement here, I think they've jumped up into the top 15 somewhere. You know, I had them 11th. I think, you know, you could put them anywhere in the top 15 and feel pretty good about it. I think Texas as well, because I think we came into the portal wondering, are they going to be able to do enough around Arch Manning, getting somebody like Cam Coleman, getting difference makers at running back? You know, that could help. So I think Texas probably went from maybe like top 10 to top 5 with their portal class. We didn't talk about them as a top 25 team, but Mike, I do think in terms of, you know, we talked about top 30, 35, 40 type teams. I didn't have Kentucky anywhere in that radar, but man, do I love what they're doing in the portal. So I'm not saying top 25, but I'm saying I at least gave them a longer look, you know, for like that top 30-ish type of team. And of course, South Carolina too, as well, on the good side of this, because of what they've done in the portal on the offensive line. Jarrett Gibson, also the Texas transfer at running back, hiring Kendall Briles. I love what they're doing this offseason. So South Carolina was not on the radar. They almost made it. They were team 26 in my rankings right now.
Well, let me ask you about Kentucky, because I believe they are the one of two teams we've yet to really discuss. So you kind of already, shared your thoughts on what a great job they did via the portal. And again, it's so early. This is kind of crazy to even ask you, Stephen, but what if a best case scenario for Kentucky, where they get all the breaks, could they make a bowl game? I mean, is that wildly unrealistic, or is that realistic at this point?
I think that's pretty realistic. Youngstown State, South Alabama, and Louisville, all at home. Those are all winnable. I think Louisville is probably going to be a top 25 team, but hey, new new excitement in the rivalry if you're Kentucky with Will Stein taking over. I'm sure he'd love to beat his alma mater in Louisville. So there's three. Vanderbilt comes to your place. Florida. I mean, I think they could pick off an upset somewhere. And that's assuming, if we assume like Kenny Minchie is actually like going to meet expectations. He's the biggest X factor in all of this. I think if anything, I probably would change my expectations and say like Kentucky has a much greater chance to get to a bowl game after the portal class they brought in, if that makes sense. I don't know that I would have given them much pre-portal class. Post-portal class, I probably think about 6 wins or so maybe.
Okay. And then I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, the only other team we haven't really discussed, Arkansas. Any thoughts on them perhaps making a bowl game? Is that wildly unrealistic or is it somewhat conceivable that, again, they're bringing in a quality a coach that has experience and really like his offensive coordinator, his defensive coordinator. He's got a lot of experience in this conference. What's your thoughts there?
I was trying to almost do the math. I think they've got, what, 5 teams that we had in the top 25 discussion tonight on the schedule in SEC play. Oh, by the way, Utah is ranked in my top 25 too. So, oh, no. Sorry, you know, for Arkansas fans here, here we go again, a brutal schedule next season. I think one thing that will help Arkansas is I like what they've done in the portal as far as volume, roster reset, and also the amount of transfers they've brought in to solidify the, especially in the secondary. And Ron Roberts, he knows this conference. He's been a solid defensive coordinator. It feels like they're going to play better defense. Maybe they're a little bit better balanced next year. I think a bowl game's probably a stretch. If they get to a bowl game, man, what a heck of a coaching job that would be for Ryan Silverfield, just given that schedule. If they didn't have to play Utah, maybe I'd feel a little bit better about it in Salt Lake City, top 25 team. I think it's going to be hard for Ryan Silverfield next year. Remember, they had no SEC wins and they were also 2-10. So if they get to 4 or 5, that's a pretty good debut for Silverfield.
Yeah, that's a good debut. Gavin says, don't sleep on Tulsa.
Yeah. Oh, man. Trey Lamb doing a good job there at Tulsa.
Oh, yeah. Did he beat, who was it that he beat? Didn't he beat like a ranked team last year? I just remember the interview.
He was the guy who basically got Mike Gundy fired there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So not a ranked team, yeah, but a power team, if you want to call them that.
Yeah. 19-12, early September. I think that was a Friday night game. Yeah.
So, I think that's why it's burned into my memory. I do remember that.
You may remember Trey Lamb. He was the head coach too at East Tennessee State, like when they had those floods over in East Tennessee, and he had to take the team. I think they had to get kind of a difficult crossing and difficult trip, and they end up winning that game. So he's a very young up and coming coach at 36 years old. Also apparently an avid golfer. So maybe Cousin Shane can do a little video with him.
So because of him, we got Mike Gundy. I don't know if you watched any of that, Stephen, but we got him last night on the ESPN Film Room Coaches Show. Cause it was just former coaches, so thank you for that one. You know what,
I didn't get a chance to watch that yet. I'm gonna try and go back and watch that on rewatch. Has anybody seen how good those guys were?
Well, we just noted often how they had their legs crossed the whole time, and it offended Shane because he's not a fan of the leg crossing. That was our main takeaway from it, but it is I just find, at least I find the coaches more enjoyable than Kurt Herbstreit on the main broadcast. So that was my preferred method of viewing the game last night.
I love watching those film rooms and also the Skycam, because I think there was an early shot. You know, I think it was like maybe the first or second possession for Miami, and the Skycam showed like Indiana was in coverage and there was like literally nobody open. I don't know what Carson Beck was going to do with the ball. And I was like, that interception's coming. Well, sure enough, it did. But it does give you kind of a better a sense of like what the quarterback is seeing. And I had this up during the SEC championship game. It's just nice to kind of see what the quarterback is seeing and seeing some of the other plays play out in real time. I wish we could all get better access to the All-22. That'd be very nice for us to kind of examine some of these things. The other part of the coach is that it does give you some insight that, you know, they're talking about like different fits and they're talking about schematically. It's kind of interesting to hear that in real time. So I'll be interested to kind of go back and check out that group of coaches. I don't know if you remember this, but there was like, was it like Les Miles and maybe some other guys back a couple years ago? I don't remember what year it was, but it felt like he was on there when he was the LSU coach.
Yeah, I don't specifically remember Les Miles, but the one that I always loved, now he kind of, well, he does, he works for the SEC to my knowledge, David Cutcliffe. They had him often. It was always fascinating to hear his thoughts on the game. But yeah, I've always, the only one I think I didn't like is Herm Edwards. Yeah. Get his ass out of here. You know what?
Mike, I actually remembered, I had to look this up. Apparently it was in 2017 that Les Miles, and I guess he had to go to the bathroom during this thing. So that's why he left here to the show. So
it sounds about right.
So yeah, actually it was,
he couldn't wait till halftime.
I guess it was maybe it wasn't the national championship. It might've been just another broadcast to celebrate the opening night of college football, but still, I mean, that's like Les Miles spot on, right?
I feel like that's a missed opportunity every Saturday, and I know there's so many games to showcase, but maybe that's why there's stuff like this exists. But you know, to have a couple coaches breaking down games in real time, I feel like that would be there's got to be an audience for that.
I'd be all in on that. I think, like you said, Cutcliffe, you know, give me a couple guys who are, you know, not
Spurrier.
Yeah. I mean, how much would you pay to watch those guys like break down games, tell some stories all day Saturday in college football? I mean, that'd be awesome.
Jimbo, he talked too fast, but it might be entertaining at least, especially if you could get him to accuse Nick Saban of cheating again.
He also had apparently some lot to say about Lane Kiffin when he was on the ACC network a few weeks ago with the whole
thing. Hey, last thing, Steven, I want to give a shout out to all these great cousins that donated, like Cousin Junior. We appreciate you, buddy. Junior gifted Mad Manilis. I hope I got that right. And then the legend, Steven Up. We appreciate you, buddy. Man, what a giving cousin.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Yeah, he gifted Defeated Samuel. Thank you, Steven Up. And then Austin, we appreciate you for becoming a member. Austin 00101, we appreciate you, buddy. And then Junior, back again with another gift of Snoop STP. Thank you, Junior. And then last but not least, Between the Hedges, he gifted KUB83. All of y'all, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. All right, Steven, anything else before we hop off?
Man, Mike, we've reached the off season. I had a heck of a time with you and all the cousins during the year. Excited to talk some ball throughout the off season. Let's have some fun. Let's make it interesting. And let's figure out some ways to get through this together, right? It's a long time till week zero in August. So,
yeah. And everyone, including you, Steven, stay as safe as possible this weekend. It's supposed to be some nasty weather. Hopefully it's not all over the South, but I know it's hitting us here in Tennessee. Snow, ice, rain, all that nonsense. So, hey, if we get snowed in, we're just going to keep pumping out the content, trying to keep you guys entertained. Shane's going out on vacation, so he'll be back tomorrow, I believe. That'll probably be the last one for Shane for some time. So I'm going to try to get creative with some content to keep you guys entertained. So be here tomorrow, same time as always, 7 Eastern, or Shane says American time, 6 Central. I think we'll do a mailbag tomorrow. But until then, that's going to do it for this episode. We appreciate each and every one of you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.